The Grade Cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a grade cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the grade cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible, at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks, champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Grey Cricketer podcast on Fox Sports. What a wonderful show we have this week. You think there's no cricket happening? Boy, are you wrong. There's so much cricket happening. So many things happening around the world. The Shield season has begun. Australia need runs. Who's going to score the runs? The selection issues continue. Matt Renshaw, is he going to get picked? Who's going to wicketkeep for Australia? England are out here. They've made it out here. But who are England? I don't know. Will McPherson, English journalist Will McPherson, is on the show, as is Brett Jeeves, to dissect all things serious cricket nature. Of course, club cricket, a bloke got a triple hat-trick somewhere. There's cartwheels for hat-trick celebrations and Shane Warne as the new bachelor, allegedly. All that and Ask TGC, of course. My name's Ian Higgins. I'm joined by Sam Perry and David Edwards. How you going, boys? Welcome back.
Happy. These intros are becoming increasingly hokey, and I love it.
Is the podcast over? Very good. Are we done? Because you just said about 800 words then.
That's the hour.
And I liked it, though. It was good. It was real good.
I really liked it, too. Yeah. Well, it's been about no runs in Australia, right? You know, we're combing the country for this number six and number seven, and there were these depressing lists of what our contenders achieved in the Shield season, and it didn't make for pretty reading. Zero hundreds. Australia needs hundreds, and there's no hundreds. I don't know what to make. I don't know what to make of it. Should we just pick the New South Wales side?
I think the safest thing to do, Pez, would be to pick the New South Wales side. But, I mean, we were all loving, you know, the build-up, the anticipation. I was constantly refreshing all my various social media feeds, wanting to know who had the edge on each other for that number six position in particular, and also the keeping position. Never have I paid such close attention to what's going on in Sheffield Shield cricket. But as it turned out, no one scored any runs, and what are we going to do to get runs? Don't know.
We're all gobsmacked by it. I mean, I'm still, I'm worried because this is Australian cricket. I mean, haven't we been raising kids in the backyard to be plundering runs at all times, at all costs and at all times? You know, there's an in-joke, early in-joke. Why is it just our bowlers taking wickets? And why was it? I get so many questions. Why was it that when we need all these runs that we played night games on really green wickets, and now sort of swing bowlers are taking six for and seven for, and now the question is, should Chad Sayers be in the side? I just want runs.
I think we all just want runs, Pez. I thought Higos was going to jump in there. I think he's the one that wants runs the most out of all of us. Look, it's a little bit scary. We're all a little bit worried. We're only a few weeks out from the first Ashes test. And we're already seeing that we're a little bit concerned about our lineup, and I think we're now seeing Renshaw's on the outer. I thought he was in the inner sanctum, but he's gone, or allegedly gone. What's going on?
Well, so, Dave, I think you're referring to a piece that came out from Peter Lawler in The Australian. Hello, Peter, if you're listening. And he has, you know, copped the tip, I suppose, that Renshaw needs runs. He would have been tipped off by one of the selectors or something like that. And, I've heard similar whispers as well, and I just wanted to say whispers on the show. But it really seems like there's, all of a sudden, there's this pressure on Renshaw, who really alleviated so much pressure last year with his dour ability to defend and leave balls. It was exactly what we needed. But now this summer against England seems like just this campaign of hyper-aggression. It's alpha, alpha, alpha. And if you're not alpha, if you're not bowling around the wicket bounces, if you're not wearing a moustache, if you're not caning England aggressively, then you can get out.
Get out, buy in or get out.
There's so much about the Renshaw non-selection or selection in general which didn't make sense. I mean, he just waltzed into first slip, and then sometimes even when Matthew Wade let through some byes, he would have to chase after the ball. And isn't his gait just shocking? It's a shocking gait.
Well, he said that.
He's just ungainly in his style, and I completely agree with Pez. You know, Pat Cummins on the show last week said that the three-pronged pace attack are going to be wearing. They're going to be styling moustaches. We know the wickets are going to be fast. All the chat with Dave Warne, it's going to be war. And Matt Renshaw isn't war. I mean, he is love and peace, and it's the complete opposite of what Darren Lehman's Australia wants.
Absolutely, he goes. I mean, I actually noticed yesterday that Renshaw's signed a BBL deal as well, which shows that he acknowledges that, you know, he's thinking to himself, everyone else is doing this. I've got levers. I need to hit a long ball. I've got to do it. I've got to sign a BBL contract. I like his personal brand the way it is. I like that he's a long-form specialist and that he's a stayer. I don't want to see him play in coloured clothing. I think I want to just see him play in whites forever. It's going to look strange when he goes out in a heat jumper, that light blue or whatever the fuck it is. You know, we've got T20 specialists these days. We've got these short-form mercenaries, you know, that tour the world for massive paydays. I don't think he belongs in that bracket. I want long-form specialists and I want Matt Renshaw in the first test. That's what I want.
I like it, Dave. Doesn't it just signal that, like, this Ashes series for Australia is going to be about recreating the Mitchell Johnson firestorm as much as possible? Australia last year announced a new horses for courses policy after being routed by South Africa. They went to India, they were humble, they spun to one, they defended, they stopped trying to hit guys over the top. But maybe horses for courses also applies to Australia. Maybe maybe we'll see the most aggressive Australian side of all time. Maybe it will be revenge for Bodyline. And if Renshaw can't be part of that as an alpha, if he can't get levers, if he can't hit powerfully, then it's Sean Marsh all the way.
He's got 3 weeks to get some vascular arms, and I'm not sure if he's going to make that deadline.
You could help him with that, he goes. I mean, Ed Cowan complimented your gym work. Perhaps you could reach out to Renshaw on Instagram. Maybe a couple of split program, some bicep sort of stuff, I don't know.
Yeah, and ever since then I've been getting non-stop requests on my Instagram, so thanks very much to Ed for that. So, I mean, this even goes beyond Australia, just the on-field stuff. I mean, the hashtag going around sent out by Cricket Australia is Beat England, which is just, I mean, it's not easy to forget. But Beat England is the hashtag, says it all. So moving on from Renshaw, though, chaps, I mean, there was absolutely no runs at all, but Mitchell Starc took 8 for. To me, that just reminded me that I'd never want to face Mitchell Starc at 8.45 with a pink ball when it's hooping, because, geez, that looks like it's hard to hit.
Yeah, it's hard to know what to make of it. I mean, our fast bowlers are doing well, aren't they? But that part is sorted out, and this is Australia, isn't it? Like, there's significant elements of the side that are doing really well. Fast bowlers look good. They're aggressive. They want to maim people. They're going to wear moustaches. That part's sorted out. Our captain scores, you know, voluminous runs. Khawaja scored 100. Warner's being the bull again. We're nearly there, but we're going to just complain about the one bit that isn't working well, which is the middle order.
Oh, you've tickled me there with voluminous runs by our captain, which is what I want this Ashes. The one thing, just if I can be earnest for a very split second here, I did notice that James Pattinson, one of our quickest fast bowlers, James Pattinson, is undergoing a spinal fusion, which is actually a surgery I had, which ultimately ruined my career, any form of sport, not just cricket. So if James Pattinson's out there and he's
career,
listening,
LinkedIn, etc.
Yeah. I can't get a job now. It's disgraceful. But honestly, I know you're probably listening, James, but please don't get that surgery because it's very difficult to come back from unless you've got, you know, the support of an entire network of Cricket Australia professionals. You might be able to do a bit better than I did.
Dave, perhaps you can shed some light on the spinal fusion surgery, because it's a very scary term, spinal and then fusion. It's a two-prong question. How many clicks did you bowl at pre-fusion, and how many clicks would you bowl at now post-fusion?
It's probably a 20-click variance from a pre and post. But honestly, I haven't even bowled a ball since I had the surgery, to be quite honest. You know, why would I do that? I have no reason to bowl a ball. I don't play cricket anymore. But it has actually impacted on me massively. Spinal fusion is, as you'd expect, you are fusing the spine. You are fusing two vertebrae. You're basically taking out a disc that's squashed and you're fusing the vertebrae either side of that. So it's a real struggle if you're a bend-the-back style fast bowler to recuperate from. You know, it takes about a year or so to get good, as they say. So, look, it's going to be a massive struggle for him to come back from, and that's me being earnest.
Well, Lotto, something that's obviously affected your life ongoing since that day was round about when you were 12 years old, when you were mancad. And boys, the mancad debate still, I mean, it roars on. The debate roars on. There's obviously the biggest law change in the ICC, the one that has caused the most interest. And there was an incident in, it reared its ugly head, the mancad incident, in a Sydney grade game here involving the University of New South Wales. And I think it might have actually involved my old club, Gordon. I didn't ask any officials because they don't talk to me anymore because I've been disowned because of this podcast. Once again, a good friend of the show, Jeff Lemon, picked this story up. And boys, the mancad, it goes on.
Well, there's something happening, isn't there? I mean, this is a revolution, and it doesn't surprise me that grade cricket has been first to adopt the normalisation of mancatting as a dismissal. And I, for one, back that. So just with the tweet, what happened was, so Uni New South Wales tweeted from their official account saying, a mancat against us today in Metro Cup. Metro Cup is like sixth grade, isn't it? So barely
sixth grade. Yeah.
A mancat against us today.
It's yuck.
In Metro Cup, sad day for the game. Let's hope karma works her magic. Hashtag go the bees. And then Jeff Lemon quote tweeted it saying, stay in your crease, champ.
Right.
there was a tweet storm. And anyway, what happened was the Uni New South Wales account deleted the tweet.
God.
Now, fearing the tweet storm.
The ultimate backtrack.
Yeah, like Alfred on the field and off, it would appear.
Look, I don't share your view on mancatting. Look, I mean, but I think that comes from personal experience, and I really think you do have to experience mancatting to actually understand how fucked up it is to get mancatted. And as Higo's alluded to just at the start of this, I was mancatted in an under-12 rep game against Sutherland. I was on 70-odd at the time. But it was the late 90s, though. So it was a different political climate, is what I'm saying. I guess back then, in the late 90s, Clinton era, it was unthinkable to mancad. But now, look, it's fucking cricket is a zero-sum game where you're either a winner or a loser. It's fucking alpha to say, sorry, champ, but rules are rules, suddenly. Even though cricket is the gentleman's game, there's apparently no room for grey area anymore. I really like the mancad as warning, not as dismissal. And suddenly the climate has changed. The political climate has changed, and now it's okay to mancat. Not happy with it. Don't agree with it.
Well, we're going to come back to this again at the end for hashtag AskTGC because the mancatting has even more so reared its ugly head. I just like saying reared its ugly head because I like getting the visceral reaction from you, Eddos. But we will touch on this later. Another thing that's happened in club cricket in Victoria was a chap took a triple hat-trick, and this is reported on cricket.com.au. And I just have to read you parts of the story because it's absolutely incredible. I mean, there's a lot going on here, but it was basically said that The article starts that a Victorian third grade cricketer is still pinching himself after taking an incredible 8-for-17 haul for local club Yallourn North, including an astonishing triple hat-trick. Now, a triple hat-trick isn't 9 wickets in a row. It's actually 5 wickets in a row. But there's actually more to this story. He started off by saying that his spell was awful. He started off with an offside wide, then a leg side wide, and everyone was laughing at him. He said, I started with two wides. One was big offside wide, and the other was a big leg side wide, and everyone was laughing at me. But then it all came together, and he claimed his initial hat-trick, 3 wickets and 3 balls, of course. His brother's best bowling figures were 8-for-30, so after he had the hat-trick, he thought, maybe I can beat him, and I really tried to do that. Then he just goes on to said, you know, for some reason he just couldn't miss, so he gets his 5 wickets and 5 balls, finishes his spell with 8-for-17, job done. And then he said, the article says, the candid self-assessment of his incredible performance included an admission that he was making up for a poor return with a bat earlier in the match after being dismissed for a golden duck on the third ball of the day. That was pretty embarrassing, he told Latrobe Valley Express. I came off and thought to myself, I hate cricket. I'm never playing again.
Haven't we all said that daily for the last 17 years?
There's a lot going on there, isn't there? I particularly like that it's probably the greatest thing he will ever do on a cricket field. He's taken 5 wickets in a row. He's taken 8-for-17. Mm. But all he can talk about is his sense of failure and people laughing at him. I mean, it's quite humble and self-deprecatory, but at the same time, this is the impact of cricket, isn't it? Like, you can take 8-for-17. All you're doing is running away from people's laughter. I mean, imagine how much someone laughed at Michael Clarke.
Oh, mate, I think I said last week that fits of laughter were very difficult to recover from, but obviously this guy's gone and taken a triple hat trick, so he's proven me wrong there. I think the biggest umbrage I have, though, and I know you guys share this with me, is that this was reported as a grade cricket fixture.
Correct,
quite abundantly clear that this is not grade cricket, is it? Hushed, somber tones
not
right
grade
now.
Cricket.
This isn't grade cricket. It's not fucking grade cricket.
Exactly the same as a bloke who scored 307 out of his side's 340. Mm. That's not grade cricket. That like no one gets a triple hat trick in grade cricket.
Nah.
But lads, there was one story that also caught the eye, and that was one bloke who actually was playing grade cricket. His name is Alex Carmi from Perth CC. He took a hat trick, and I don't know if you've seen the footage here, but he actually does like a cartwheel celebration. And Pez, you'll appreciate this as a Manchester United fan. But it reminded me of like Nanny's celebration when United beat Liverpool 3-0. And he sort of like did this like somersault pike with a twist, and it was actually really impressive. It's something that Tom Daly, British diver, would have been proud of. It was astonishing athleticism from a great cricketer.
Especially with the spikes on, don't you reckon? Like, how did he do it with the spikes on? Because I watched the flip, and it was like it was a slow-mo flip. Well, firstly, it was a cartwheel into a backflip, so... Let's just be specific there. But he was wearing spikes on. That's difficult to get air and leverage, I would have thought. It was the rarest thing I've ever seen.
It's very incongruous with the like stereotype of a big fast bowler, isn't it? Like he sort of hustles and bustles in, gets the wicket, and then all of a sudden he turns into like Torval and Dean. Like celebrations are getting out of hand. Yeah, because now people are wheeling away. Pat Cummins last week was talking about twirling a stump over his head as he's running away. Like, they're kind of like increasingly football celebrations into cricket. Like, what happened to just, you know, a bit of ewing and wooing like Ric Flair and guys just sort of awkwardly touching each other because it's the only male contact they get? There's a lot of pressure on to celebrate a wicket well now.
I think I blame Brett Lee. Do you remember when he used to jump up and like click his heels like a fucking leprechaun or something? He just like he'd take a wicket and then he'd kind of do this like gleeful little jump and kick his heels. It was, I think it was the beginning of the end.
Yeah, like at the start, I thought it was kind of cool because he's from Wollongong, and I thought it looked like he was like grinding a skateboard, like shadow skateboarding kind of thing.
Oh yeah, fans on grind.
The more it went on, the more it looked like a little bit more flamboyant or camp as he was doing it, and again at odds with the fact that he dismissed someone with a ball at 160 km/h.
I still think the greatest celebration in Test cricket history was like Stuart Broad's face when I don't even know who took the catch. He was in the Ashes last time, and it was the best reaction ever. Yeah. Just it was like morbid horror and like what he just witnessed.
Is this happening?
That's very great cricket though. Yeah. Just like oh my god, did he play that shot? Like horror at the yuckness of the dismissal. Yeah.
That was actually, that was a very, very good celebration. It's like so mocking of the batsman too. It's just like, I can't believe this is happening, that you've done that, you absolute imbecile.
Do you have a disability? Like why, what compelled you to play that shot?
Lads, just one more thing before we get Will McPherson on the line. But Shane Warne is alleged to be the new bachelor in Australia. The Bachelorette just finished up here in Australia. I can't believe I'm saying this on a podcast. Yep. But obviously, Dave and I got together in Sydney and we spooned each other and watched the season finale of The Bachelorette. And we were thinking, who's going to be the new bachelor, weren't we, Dave? And it's allegedly going to be Shane Warne, to which he has refuted these claims. But would you like to see Shane Warne as a new bachelor?
Oh, he goes... Absolutely, we have to. And I think we've been waiting for this announcement for a while. I mean, hasn't confirmed it. He's still being very coy about it. But you just look at his Twitter activity over the past couple of months. Even his bio says, and I'm just reading it now because I've got it up. It's my screensaver. Ex-cricketer, proud father of three awesome teenagers, cricket commentator, poker player, huge fan of 80s music, and still single. And he goes, and Pez, I remember sending you this screenshot of another tweet from Warnie a month or so ago. Probably when he was watching The Bachelor, actually, he came out with this one. Mm. Any singles out there who love being single but miss being in an awesome relationship with cuddles on the couch in tracky dacks and chilling? That was just a real warning sign that Warnie's sad, and even the most decorated Chop King just wants someone to come home to and to cuddle on the couch with.
In tracky tacks.
It will be phenomenal viewing. 2 points on this. Firstly, being in London, sometimes it's really It's nice to see when, you know, there are tweets from the great cricketer from either of you two. And I was wondering who did the tweet about The Bachelor recently about Justin, I think, getting dropped to fours or something. And the thing I noted about it, he goes, because I'm looking at you, you seem to know a lot about The Bachelor, is you tweeted that just one. As, like, the women's Ashes was on. Like, Australia was playing England in cricket and the great cricketer was tweeting about The Bachelor, which I think says a lot. Yeah, the second thing to everything. Anyone out there, if you do want some sense of how Warnie goes on a reality TV show, I think he was on Survivor or something similar to that a few years ago, and there's this great footage of him dealing with a spider being put into his hand. He was crying, literally crying, and it was just phenomenal viewing. I think he would be a perfect talent for that show.
Oh, absolutely.
Will McPherson coming up.
Harry Broad, good morning. You've been reading The Great Cricketer.
But most of the book has taken up with proving he isn't good enough. Locker room language is rife and sexual immaturity is rampant. Having sexual relations is called burgling a chop. I'm very disappointed. I thought this should be a great book.
So, boys, as you know, we're in bed with the enemy. And we've got on the line a member of the UK press pack. I mean, for Australian listeners, the UK press, you know, is a intimidating thing. You know, you think about paparazzi, you think about press hounds, or the media over here, you know, from London, can be pretty vicious. That does not describe the guy that we've got on the line, though. We've got Will McPherson, who's one of the best young cricket writers in the game. He's covering the Ashes for the Times. I think he's the offsider to Michael Atherton. And it's just going to be good to hear an English accent, to be honest. Will, welcome to The Great Cricketer. Mm.
Thank you for having me, guys. I'm a long-time fan. It's great to be with you.
Oh, it's a good voice, isn't it? It's really going to offset our harsh nasal tones.
What can you say to that?
How's it going? Is everyone well?
Yeah, no, we're all good, mate. Look, we ask the questions here, so... Alfred already. No, Will, your antipathy aside... You're over in Perth at the moment, which is where the English team landed recently. Can you tell us a little bit about how they were received by the Australian press and the public?
Yeah, it's quite funny. I mean, my impression is that no one really knows who any of the England players are. But yeah, obviously, the most probably one of the few one of the few very well known. I think it's going back to Alfring. I think it's sort of a very, you know, just. From the word go, Australia's just turning its back on England and just saying, look, you're not even worth it. So I was at the airport with a load of TV crews there when they arrived, and I was sort of keeping a close eye on them because I thought this was hilarious as well, because I don't think when Australia land in England that this really happens, where you get lots of TV crews and stuff. But I was looking and quite a few of them had sort of cheat sheets, and they knew who they were asking questions to. But this wasn't that successful because Alistair Cook, a man who... has lost two Ashes series 5-0 in this country and also scored 760-odd runs in another, in a victorious one. A bloke went up to him, I think it's Channel 7, possibly, I don't want to name and shame too hard, but I think it was Channel 7, went up to him and went, so, James. And Cook just looked at him and went, sorry?
Yeah.
the name's Alistair. But,
That's just a deep-seated insecurity. That's just a deep-seated insecurity from, you know, our colonial past. That's right. All that is.
Indeed. I mean, I presume he thought he was James Anderson, who's also an outstanding-looking man. you know, perhaps it was that.
But who are these guys, mate? Because I just Googled on my iPhone, who are England team? And you go through about four or five headshots I see, and I see Alistair Cook, Joe Root, Ben Stokes, James Anderson, and then I get to some blokes that I just don't even know who these guys are. Dawood Malan. I mean, I'm sure he's a wonderful bloke, but is that really his name, Dawood? Is that Welsh? That's all my questions.
I mean, to play up to sort of enjoyable Australian stereotype of English cricket.
Please.
David Malan, he is a South African.
Right, of course. Yeah.
He's from South Africa, really. So, I mean, Stokes, I don't think he's coming, but he was one of maybe, I reckon we were five or six sort of very reasonably recognisable faces. So you've got Jimmy Anderson, Broad, the captain Root, and the former captain Cook. Mm. And then... Stokes, Johnny Bairstow. I think quite a few fans would know Johnny Bairstow, mainly because he's a raging ranger. And then, like, beyond that, I do accept that this is not the sort of it's not an England team full of, I mean, Moeen Ali maybe. I'd imagine most, he's played a World Cup here. Chris Wokes possibly, but there's a lot of guys from who are sort of fresh out of domestic cricket in England who wouldn't necessarily be terribly recognisable.
And so, mate, with that in mind, Will, is there a quiet kind of confidence among England where you think that you might be able to take advantage of Australia's hubris? You know, we love teams turning up and thinking we're just going to turn them over, that all these faceless guys are going to come out and cop round the wicket bounces and succumb meekly, you know, to our hyper-aggression. Do you think that actually plays into England's hands somewhat? And if there are players there that we don't recognise, you know, who are the ones that you think we might really know, you know, by the end of the tour?
Yeah, that's a good question. I reckon there's a bit of a, with the Stokes thing, they've been copping quite a lot back home from the press and sort of trying to keep their heads down. But I think a sort of siege mentality has developed a little bit where they are trying to convince themselves that they can win over. And I think they actually can, but I wouldn't put them as favourites, but I don't see why they can't win the Ashes. Mark Stoneman's the opening bat. He's gonna open with Cook. I think he's a bloke who I think is well equipped to do pretty well here. He's the only bloke in English domestic cricket who's scored 1,000 runs for 5 consecutive years, and he's waited a long time for his chance. He's 30-odd. He's only played 3 tests, and he looked pretty accomplished in those 3. He's actually played a lot of great cricket in Sydney. So you lads might have alphaed him at some stage, but. He's a fella. I would say that I'd be surprised if he has a poor series. And then Bairstow and Moeen Ali are going to move up a slot to sort of cover for Stokes, who won't be around. And I think they're both properly experienced Test cricketers now, 40-odd Tests each. So I think they're well set up to do well. And then I think the bolter is this lad called Craig Overton from Somerset. He's this sort of big, brawny, fast bowler who's probably going to bat. Well, he might bat number 9 below Wokes, and he'll bowl quick as well. So he's another one I think could do all right. I'm not so convinced about some of the others, though.
There's a fair list, though. Let's talk about Stokes. I mean, we have to talk about Ben Stokes, and I appreciate there's probably some limitations on what can and can't be said, but Australia awoke to the news a few days ago, emerging from the Daily Mail, that in fact Ben Stokes's actions were that of a hero, and that he I don't really want to go into the rights and wrongs of that, Will, but it seems to me that there's a little bit of detail emerging about what's going on. And I just wonder, and I'm saying this kind of cheekily, I just imagine the UK press pack kind of quietly just contorting the story a little bit to make it maybe, you know, just to roll out the red carpet a little bit, make it a little bit more feasible that Stokes comes out and dominates Australia. Are you doing that with your press colleagues?
I don't think so. I think the cricket guys, the story that came out over the weekend about the two fellas who he was supposedly defending, that was from sort of the main section of the paper. I think the cricket guys are sort of, it'd be a huge surprise for us if he turned out, not least because I think the main thing about this is the criminal proceedings are still going on against Stokes, but what happens are, even if he gets cleared, I think the ECB are sort of a mind that they're going to have to come down on him like a ton of bricks anyway, because it's not a great look for there's a lot of, like, in the UK, there's a lot of stuff about sports governance at the moment and how irresponsible it all is. And I think it would be a terrible look if they said, don't worry, you know, you can go out after a one-day international with the next one 2 days away, have 15 pints and then throw 15 punches. You know, I think if they said that was okay, then and then you turn up for the next international that England play or the next test that England play. I don't think they think they can do that. So I think even if he manages to get away with it in the eyes of the law, I think I can't see him turning up. I'd be really surprised. I was just about to say, all I do think, if he does turn up, it will be absolutely hilarious. I have like nice visions of him arriving the week before the first test, which is England are playing up in Townsville that week. and him just sort of getting off the plane in a country town and then just going straight. I just think it'd be absolutely hilarious, and I think people would try, like, it would really ramp up Ashes if he did, but I'd give it less than a 10% chance.
Look, if he did come, he was just going to have the worst trip of his life. Like, he's just going to not be able to go anywhere without copping it from every single angle. I mean, I think probably for his own health long term, probably best that, you know, criminal proceedings aside, he sits this one out, because...
What do you reckon would be easier? Sort of nine months behind bars, or 3 months in Australia with a... What I will say is the advantage of no one in Australia recognising a single member of the England squad is that they're actually going to be able to go out a little bit if they do fancy it, because no one's going to know who they are. They can do the whole 15-pint job and no one will recognise it. So that, you know, there is that advantage.
I mean, on that note, Will, you're kind of a first or second time traveller to Australia as a journo, you know, in your professional role. What sort of circuits are you looking forward to, you know, throughout Australia? Is there anywhere in particular that you're particularly keen to get around and give a 15-pint job to yourself?
Townsville definitely stood out when I saw the schedule come out. It's the only one on the only place on the tour I haven't been to. So I'm chomping to get among a palmy up there and see what's going on. I mean, sounds like an interesting place for an Englishman. So.
Well, to anyone listening to the Grade Cricketer, if you are in Townsville and you want to look after Will McPherson when he's there, you know, give him some tips, etc., please just write into us. You can pass that on to him. Will, thanks very much for joining us for the chat. That was very insightful. And again, it's just always great to have people on the show who actually know about the game. Good luck throughout your travels in Australia. Hopefully you do join us again.
Cheers. Thank you very much. See you soon, guys.
Thanks, Will.
This summer, we've got the biggest renovation challenge yet. Two teams will have to transform not one, but two broken down grade cricket dressing rooms every single week. There will be tension.
What even is grade cricket, Dazza? Why do we take time off work to do this?
Come on, Charlesy. Work hard, love.
There will be drama.
I just want to make this perfect. Grade cricket deserves a great home.
But when the reveal comes, there will be joy.
Oh, God. Lads, boys, look at this, eh? Results.
Ever since the missus booted me out and took the kids, I've been sleeping in this dressing room. It's a second home to me, literally. So this is really special.
For us to be able to come in and give these grade cricketers a beautiful new dressing room, one they can drink their beers in, sing the club song, judge each other in the showers, yeah, you know, it makes you feel good.
But this ain't no charity. Not when the stakes are this high.
I'm not here for a bloody holiday. I mean, if I wanted that, I would have gone to Bali or Thailand.
It's Australia's toughest renovation competition. Winner takes all.
If I have to dish out a little bit of chin music, I will.
Presented by Australia's favourite knockabout blue-collared larrikin millionaire.
We're giving Grade Cricket the reno makeover it deserves.
Reno Rampage, coming soon.
Well, boys, it's my very special pleasure to introduce this man to the show. He is the hottest property in cricket writing, in my view. His articles are unmissable. I'm sure he experiences a lot of passive aggression at the hands of other journos who can't get half the clicks that this man can get. He bowled at 140 clicks. He gets a lot of clicks. It's Brett Jeeves. Brett, welcome to the Grade Cricketer.
G'day, guys. How are you going?
Very good, mate. We actually asked you off air, is there anything off limits in this conversation? You just said, nah, nothing at all. So we're really looking forward to this. Everyone in cricket offside.
I was going to say, please don't tease me for being a clickbait specialist. Eddie Cowan gets into me about it all the time. If he wants to upset me, he's like, you're just a clickbait journalist. And it gets me. It really tugs at me. So,
he's just a talking head.
Great start.
Well, he's just a talking head.
Everybody has their own brands, you know. Like, Cowan is the intellectual head of cricket in Australia.
Rent a quote.
Yeah. Look at us bantering about Eddie Cowan.
Eddie's very funny. Like I've known Ed for a long time. We played state juniors against each other, and we've kind of known each other since we were 17, 18. He's been a good mate to me across the journey, but I do remember him saying to me one day, I'd written a piece, and he's like, this is like Fish 349. And when Fish 349 in Hobart is a kind of a higher end fish and chip shop, the rest of your stuff, flippers is trash. It's like, $6 fisherman's basket. And bloody Ed, he gets me. Yeah, he's way too smart for his stuff.
Oh, yeah. Did you say to him, well, sorry, Hemingway, why don't you publish something? So anyway, Brett, let's talk about your writing, because the last time you came on the show, we talked a bit about your career and playing in Australian cricket. But, I mean, the last year or so, your articles can't be missed, because you sort of provide this unmatched insight into what actually happens in Australian cricket circles. And, you know, I'm obviously pissing in your pocket right now, so hopefully we can be friends later. But you also write very entertainingly. I mean, like, what has been the reception to your pieces in the last year? Do you get a lot of feedback from people? Do people start tipping you off? Have you accrued sources from people because, everyone must read Jeeves?
Yeah, look, I mean, firstly, I appreciate that enormously. It's one thing, and I don't know if you guys get much of the same, but it's, you don't often get someone say, hey, well done, you're doing a great job, keep it up. And I think because of a lot of stuff I'm writing is pretty honest, and I'm largely trying to have a bit of fun with it as well. So trying to provide some entertainment and tell some funny yarns, but also provide some honest opinion around what I'm seeing across the game and what I've seen in the past. And I think a lot of it ties into the types of hierarchies that you guys play on, and from a great cricket perspective and beyond, obviously. And in terms of feedback, cricketers generally don't like it that much, and I've lost some, to be honest, I've lost some friendships with people that I did hold quite close as mates. But on the flip side of that, I think too that it's become part of my weekly profession. So I'm paid to write now, which is great. I didn't start off being paid to write. I was a blogger way back then, and it's kind of evolved nicely for me, which is great. But certainly on the downside, that level of honesty, and certainly when it comes to Tasmania cricket, where I've provided some really honest opinion about, the inner workings of relationships, recruitment processes, and overall performance. It has come with the negatives of losing some friendships, and that's part of being an adult, I think.
There is a, Brett, there is a kind of a rich tradition of cricketers becoming journalists. You look back at Roebuck and Atherton and Ashley Mallett or something.
Benno.
Those kind of guys. Benno, now Brett Jeeves, obviously. Do you see yourself as a journalist? Like, what do you kind of want to do with your writing? I mean, you've got the weekly articles, but do you want to kind of take it a step further and write some long form, or what are you kind of planning?
Yeah, to be honest, I'm really not sure. I mean, I work day to day, so I manage a small government hospitality program in the south of Tassie, so down in Hobart, across customer service. So, venues providing a great customer experience to tourists. It's a great job, and I absolutely love it. It's good fun. I get to do a bit of secret shopper, so a lot of cream buns, and then I get to judge the cream buns. So it doesn't get any better than that for a fat kid, former cricketer. Perfect, lots of coffee. I'm trying to. I'm being really honest. I'm trying to be smart. I don't know where the writing side of things takes me. It's at the moment it's good fun, and I'm really enjoying it. And it seems to be well received by general punter, which is great. Largely that's obviously who it's targeted for. If in 6 months' time Fox Sports decide that I'm out of my ear, then hopefully I've still got my job and I'll be able to maintain and hold a normal life rather than sucking my thumb and crying in the back shed for 12 months.
So let's get your thoughts, Brett, on the current state of Australian cricket, which is in a real state of flux, it seems, anyway. I mean, Australia constantly seems to be for the next big thing, and that's sort of at the detriment at the moment of the Sheffield Shield, where basically the best players aren't get picked. I mean, obviously the biggest story this year's been a mutual friend of ours, Ed Cowan. But there's got to be a theory as to why the best players aren't really being picked. Like, is there a theory? Like, there's got to be some method behind the madness, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of baffling. I'm really not sure. I honestly, you know, I've given this so much thought over the last 12 months. I can't pinpoint why we've gone down this path. Yeah, I mean, if you look at the circumstances surrounding it, I mean, you know, clear cut, Ed has been the best domestic performer since 2014-15 season, you know, in terms of runs scored. He had a career best year last year. The man is on fire. Ed's bloomed really late. You know, I'm sure you guys read Ed's piece that was, I think, went on ESPN.com there a little while ago about Ed's evolution as a player and how he worked it out, and now he's in this place of, you know, batting with a sense of freedom rather than, you know, kind of what everyone else wants him to do. And at age 35, the game shouldn't be lost to him. You know, Ed's got so much to offer, and if he's in career best form, then brilliant. Let's pick him. He deserves his chance. Rather than, if you look at what actually happened around that selection, so Ed comes out, you know, for whatever reason, someone's saying to Nick Maddison and to New South Wales Cricket, there must be an opportunity at test level for Nick Maddison as an opening batter. Why else would he be moving from that 5 or 6 spot? It's completely lost on me. I think that, you know, if you saw the dismissals of Nick, particularly in the first innings, where he, you know, sadly let one go off Chad Sayers, I think that hit middle stump. Frankie Worrell. Hit middle stump. You know, I mean, technically, he just doesn't have the capability to play the swinging and moving ball. So, you know, with Ed gone, Nick jumps up, and then an opener in Daniel Hughes bats at 6. It's completely ass about. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. So, I mean, to me, they're kind of, you know, those selections have to be coming from Cricket Australia or Steve Smith or someone's feeding that through to New South Wales to make that suggestion that, you know, that there's an opportunity for Nick at the top of the order. Otherwise, you know, I mean, he's probably one of the best 5 or 6 batters in the country. He plays with great freedom. He's got a great eye, hits the ball clean, which is why he's been a really great white ball performer. But it's just not working for us. You know, this approach of blooding young blokes and the captain's call and picking guys on a whim and, you know, not playing our veterans who are our best performers. You've only got to look at the ICC rankings to know that over the last 3 or 4 years, we're falling. You know, our test ranking is lower. Boy, it's dropping. Our one-day ranking is dropping. And, you know, for a game in T20 cricket that dominates our summer, we fail at it miserably. I think we're 7th or 8th ranked in the world. And we're miserable T20. We're a miserable T20 nation. Yes. It seems to be the foundation for our selection. It seems to be the foundation for our summer. We're just not getting it right, and it's obvious in our performance.
Can I sort of clumsily lead you with the question, Brett? I mean, I look at the people who are selecting the side, or huge influencers on the selections anyway. Mark Waugh, Greg Chappell, Darren Lehman, wonderful players each. And there is a pattern with those guys, or something in common, in that they were like classy players who almost were, you know, so abundantly gifted as to almost possibly they might struggle to appreciate the value of graft. And it certainly seems to me as though that they they tend to push forward people who also seem to be the same, perhaps very talented, but not that grafting. And also in reverse, they tend to kind of diminish or exclude people from selections who are the opposite. I mean, do you think there's anything worth following there? Is there any truth to that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a terrific observation and one that is certainly in line with, you know, potentially Ed Cowan not, you know, sort of being in line for test selection coming up, or or sort of, you know, not getting an extended run at it previously. I mean, I remember Ed making his debut. I want to use Ed as an example, but you know, Eddie made his debut at the MCG Boxing Day. He was not out at lunch, and I think he may have been on 27 or 28 or 30. You know, he'd worked his tail off. He'd let the ball go. You know, and the bowlers were starting to, you know, sort of adapt different game plans. It was good cricket from him. You know, and he walks off at lunchtime, having done his job as an opener, and Ian Healy's mocking him. Oh, he can't do this to his, you know, to his other partners now. The runs are only coming from one end. It's not good enough. He's got to score. What game are we playing here? This is a 5-day test match. Matt Renshaw copped the same treatment. He scored his 180 in Sydney last year and was brilliant. You know, his first 50 came off about 120 balls. Perfect. That's what you want from your opening batter. You know, we go back to having played, you know, when I was playing Shield cricket, one of the team mantras was, you know, make sure we bat as long into the day as we can so that our middle to lower order players are facing the bowlers into their third and fourth spells. Mm. That's when you're going to do the most damage. You're not going to do any damage if you're all out for 320 and there's still 20 overs left in the day. It doesn't make any sense to me. I'm completely lost on it. But I think your point around, you know, this selection committee and their style of play, you know, it's not a bad little theory.
So obviously Australia are looking for runs everywhere. We're desperate for runs. It's a drought of runs, especially after the first round of the Shield games. I mean, how concerning is it that over the last probably 4 years, they've been going back as far as that Australia's batting collapses have been shocking? I mean, the amount of times we've lost 5, 6, 7, 8 wickets in a session over the last few years is concerning. Yet we've seen so in round one of the Shield that, I mean, South Australia got rolled for 92 and then obviously your old Tassie team knocked over for 63, I think it was as well.
Yeah, I mean, Tassie were 9 for 30.
Right.
Yeah, and I think Bo Webster was caught on Bo Webster on the last wicket was caught off a no ball with a score on 42. So, I mean, it could have been far worse for Tassie. But it's, I mean, also, you know, so again, if we look at whoever made the decision to schedule round one of Shield cricket, pink ball under lights, does that make any sense? Probably not. Yeah, I mean, I know that there is a pink ball test around the corner, obviously in Adelaide, and that's been largely successful from a commercial perspective. But did it need to be round one? You know, could we not have had a really good look at guys with a red ball because that's what we're going to see in the first test? To me, that would make a little
almost
bit
makes
more
too
sense,
much sense. Yeah,
it makes too much sense, doesn't it? Yeah, and I'm not even that smart. So it's kind of, you know, I mean, if I can stump that up, then, you know, what are these people that are being paid hundreds of thousands of dollars doing? But I mean, that's your point largely is why I was pretty keen to see Eddie Cowan actually playing the first test bat at 3 and have Usman Khawaja bat at 6 or Pete Hanscom bat at 6 with Usman at 5, just to provide some stability in that batting order. Matty Wade at 7 and Glenn Maxwell at 6. It hasn't been great. It really hasn't worked that well. You know, so by sort of solidifying that middle order with a Khawaja and a Hanscom combination of 5-6 and a rock in Cowan at 3, to me provides really good depth and it's a good strong list. But you know, if we go in with Uzi at 3 and then we may have Maxwell Wade, we may have Maxwell Neville, who knows how it shapes up, but it's not going to be Eddie, that's for sure.
Well, I'm glad that we've agreed that Australian cricket is in deep crisis on this call. Very honestly, still think they'll win 3-1. I wanted to ask Brett about, just to take it back to your writing a little bit, you know, like all really good cricketers, it appears that you have sports that you prefer to cricket. You've started writing about NBA, you know, just to completely throw you. Can you just run us through the NBA season and what we can expect this year? I mean, is it going to be Golden State and the Cavs again?
Yeah, look, I mean, both Golden State and the Cavs have just slumped over the last couple of games. The Cavs have started really badly. But this is the great thing about the NBA. You know, the season's written off. We're 5 games in of 82. It's like the AFL season, you know, after round one, the season's locked away. you know, lock it in. This is what's going to happen, you know, in 23 weeks' time. I've got to say that, you know, there's one thing about NBA readers that that jumped out at me over the weekend. I'm not great with facts, so I'm very, very, like, if I write, I'm really reliant on my editor to kind of straighten things up and tighten it up. And the piece I wrote on the weekend about the NBA, the Phoenix Suns and Eric Bledsoe and the trade debacle and his tweeting, I'm sure you guys may have seen, he effectively said he didn't want to be in Phoenix anymore. And then
doesn't want to be.
Yeah, and then well, he was at a hair
doesn't want to be.
And then his text wasn't actually about the Phoenix Suns at all. So I wrote about that, and in it I'd mentioned that Sean Marion played in the 2009 Western Conference Finals for Phoenix. He wasn't actually in Phoenix at the time, so I got that one wrong. I said that Lonzo Ball scored a triple-double against
I love this.
Against the Suns. He was an assist away from the triple-double.
To be fair, though, we write for Pop Sports as well, and we just throw up anything, and they don't even look at it.
They clean it. They polish it. They're brilliant. Well, no one polished this, and the NBA readers went clean off their lips. I copped it from all angles. So cricket and football readers tend to let that stuff slide a little bit, whereas the NBA readers were they were pretty harsh.
I love that, Pez, that we've introduced NBA content on the Great Cricketer podcast. Just a shameless effort to go past Bill Simmons' Ringer NBA podcast.
Well, exactly.
On the chart.
This is a very subtle slide into broader sports as well. You know, that's why we're talking about, you know, the NBA player who said he doesn't want to be here. You know, that has parallels with cricket, you know, because none of us want to be there.
But also stats, like people, like, if anyone who loves stats more than cricketers, it's like American sports fans. They just love stats.
Salivating over box scores.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure if you guys are NBA fans, but I've already reached my data limit for this month, day one, through the refreshing of box scores. Done.
I think that's when it really gets me. You know when you're a I'm like proper cricket person when it's literally not your favourite sport, not even in your top three, because you've learned to hate cricket so much.
Yeah, the really good cricketers hate cricket,
When actually, a really quick story. When I was playing injured standard fare for me, I got into betting on the NBA, and it was back when there was no real online process to bet. So I used to have to go to the tote out at a suburb called Moona, which is a large Centrelink sort of based area. Right. I was trying to be as nice as I could there for Moona. So I'm out there in my beanie, my hoodie, got my slippers on, and I'm standing at the little fish and chip shop next door, getting just an abundance of money, $200 out of the machine, so I could go and have a punt next door at about 9 in the morning. And with that, the chairman of selectors, Cricket Taz, Michael Farrell, who was working as a cigarette rep at the time, he walks into the fish and chip shop, sees me standing at the ATM machine holding about $400. I've got my betting tips for the day written down. By this stage, I've got my coffee and egg and bacon roll. And he's like, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Oh, I'm just waiting for the tote to open." That afternoon training, I had a gambling anonymous little sticker so it actually did get a bit ugly for me because I was bored. I had very little else to do, and I wasn't great on the punt, so that was that.
Brett, I love the territory that we've covered in this conversation that very quickly went from Ernest Ashes chat to the NBA and Gambling Anonymous. So, you know, you can expect that on the Great Cricketer. You know, cricket's a broad church. Thanks so much for joining us, mate. You know, really look forward to reading your pieces throughout the summer. One of the rare people who, you know, is unencumbered by, I suppose, needing to look after their mates and stuff like that. Yeah, so it's really good to read what you're saying. Thanks for coming on the show.
Well, we can't lose what you don't have. And if you haven't got any friends, then you're kind of good to go. You can sort of shoot from the hip. But and look, the book's a beauty too. So hopefully it does well for you. I like that you didn't bring it out at Christmas. You didn't go for the cliche Christmas release. which is great, and it's a great read. So
no, we thought we'd go for a soft launch this time, just to really position ourselves for the Christmas assault.
But if people do want to buy it for Christmas, booktopia.com or at all good bookstores and Big W.
Perfect. See, magic. There it is, little lead-in.
Perfect.
Very nice.
Cheers, Brett.
Thanks, mate.
On you guys.
Big day.
No, big night. I've got to clean up the last two wickets, sing the song, do the covers, sing the song, drink 42 beers in the sheds, have a shower, sing the song, publicly objectify my teammates' rigs, compare sizes, tell everyone how good I was when I was 17, go to a strip club, lie to my wife, then spend all of Sunday being an emotionally absent father and husband. Big nights start with grade cricket. Lying to yourself has never been harder.
That was Brett Jeeves, insightful as ever. A fair bit of feedback over the last couple of weeks, and rightly so, that the cast is dragging on. So I think in the spirit of your own time and giving it back to you, we might hold over RSTGC till next week, because we're just showered with content, aren't we,
Dave? And also the fact that Higos has just gone walkabout. His internet's died, and we haven't seen him in 30 minutes, so... He goes, if you're there, give us a call, mate. But, yeah, we're just going to skip it this week. Please. But we'll give it a good nudge next week, the Ask TG section. Keep asking those questions. We love getting them. We love seeing those notifications in our phones, and we'll answer them all in due course.
I do love seeing the number pop up on the phone. It's everything to me. It's kind of like poker machines. And just finally, if you do want to get our book, it's in stores now, definitely. It's online. We've got another week of, like, promoing it pretty hard, because if we don't, then it won't be in bookstores at Christmas. So please forgive us for that.
Yeah, it's in bookstores in Australia and New Zealand. You can grab it online. There's like a million different places. I mean, we enjoy hearing from you, but if you're going to ask us where to get it, just go to Google, because Google is better than asking us via Facebook, where's the book? Where can I get your book? You're going to get a lot more answers, and it's going to be a lot more clear cut than what we can answer.
People might just want to... talk to us, which I understand, but I also agree with you on that count. And just finally, Dave, a little shout out. Can I give a personal one? A little shout out to North London Cricket Club, who were kind enough to allow me to host their end of season presentation last week. It was absolutely incredibly funny night. The highlight being the
doing some corporate gigs.
Exactly. The highlight was, like, it was a classic club cricket night in England. The president got up at one stage, and aside from being very nice and effusive in his praise for the club and its history, he then started to say how soft the club was and how they needed to be better on the field and stop sledging batsmen. And, you know, everyone had about 10 drinks by then, and people were yelling out, "Yeah, tell us how shit we are. Spank me, daddy." It was fantastic. It was loose. It was a pleasure to host. If you do want us to host, or if you do want to host for your own presentation nights that aren't ex-cricketers talking about drinking 50 beers and cheating on their wives and how funny that is, then we can do that.
So, we can do that.
Please get in touch.
Well, that's about it.
But that'll be all.
Cheers.
Cheers.